Professor Grunsplatter's Spookatorium. I am your curator, Professor Grunsplatter. Beyond these doors crouch the wonders, horrors, and wry smiles of an uncanny world. This world, your world. Should you choose to come inside, the sounds and stories that the shadows tell will be yours to behold. Make no mistake, it is a place of questions, not answers. A place where the tickle in your belly or the twitch in your eye simply mean you're paying attention. But then if you weren't curious, you wouldn't be here. There'll be no refunds once you enter. Thank you for your attention, and the brave ones, come with me.
Likes to rock to a crazy song. Every night she's a winning arm. She's a chick with a wicked twitch. She's my witch. Likes to drag in a going mill. Plays a chicken just for the thrill. Till you wind up in a ditch. She is my witch.
Last night at the museum, they were searching for a trace of the thief who stole the mummy's bracelet from its case. And now tonight the mummy's curse is on his thieving head, for the mummy's come to life, awakened from the dead.
Give me my bracelet back.
The thief who stole the mummy's bracelet gave it to his love, and now tonight she wears it while the full moon's up above. But as she dances in his arms, a chill is in her veins. She seems to hear a ghostly voice echo this refrain.
Give me my bracelet back.
At last the dance is over, it's time to say goodnight. Her lover sees her to the door, she holds him very tight. She whispers, please don't leave me. Then upon the stairs, their blood runs cold because they see the mummy standing there.
Give me my bracelet back.
The mummy, he stretched out his hand to take the bracelet back. And where his fingers touched the flesh, it began to crack. Then right before her lover's eyes, she turned to stone. At least that's what they told him when they took him to the home.
I've got my bracelet back.
Greetings, welcome to episode 81 of the Spookatorium. It is the Halloween episode, so it may go a little bit longer than usual. The show opened today with Kip Tyler and She's My Witch. And the last one you heard there was Lee Ross with The Mummy's Bracelet. Those are both off the Minnie the Moocher at the Morgue compilation. A little bit of business to take care of. I got a notification that the last episode of the show was removed from Spotify because, quote, this podcast service is not intended to be a music distribution tool. In an effort to enable all creative artists the opportunity to live off their art, creators who wish to share their music on Spotify should use a music distributor. So they pulled the whole episode, and I imagine now that I am on their radar, that will not be the last time. I suspect I could count the Spotify listeners of this program on one hand. They didn't say what song was the problem, but that the music wasn't licensed. Interestingly, that episode did not have any content blocked by YouTube's copyright crawler. It went through there just fine. So I don't particularly give a shit about Spotify. I know that there are a couple people that listen to it there. The gall of them saying that they give artists an opportunity to live off their art and playing songs on this show jeopardizes that is quite something. I know there is more than one of you that use this show to discover new music and then eventually go buy the releases from the artists and labels featured here, which I am grateful for, and I would expect they are too. Incidentally, I don't get any money from Spotify for having the show on there. It's just on there because of the service that I use to put it on other places. So this doesn't affect the regular podcast feed if you're subscribed through a normal podcast service. It's just one more stupid thing. Anyway, there may be a couple of tracks in this episode that get blocked. We'll see. Always best to subscribe direct. Coming up in a bit, I will have a short story from Edgar Allan Poe and a poem from George Parsons Lathrop. But first, this is L'Enfant de la Forêt with Flowers of Flesh and Bone. Thank you.
putréfaction avancée. La putréfaction provoque une couleur verdâtre, ainsi qu'une dilatation du corps et de la tête du cadavre. En plus, elle est accélérée lorsque le corps se retrouve à l'air après avoir séjourné dans l'eau, comme dans ce cas. C'est pourquoi l'identification morphologique n'est pas possible. Nous ne pouvons plus vraiment parler de corps. Le cadavre est en partie déchiqueté. La vue d'un tel spectacle peut être extrêmement traumatisante pour nous.
Thank you.
That was VHS Glitch with Dead Bodies from the Halloween Strangers release. Before that was Postscriptum with Cadaverine Deficiency. And that set opened with Les Enfants de la Forêt and Flowers of Flesh and Bones. This is a poem I came across recently by George Parsons Lathrop called Incantation that was written in 1892. Lathrop was born in Hawaii in 1851, which was probably quite a way to grow up since Hawaii didn't become a state until more than 100 years later. He ended up marrying Nathaniel Hawthorne's daughter. Lathrop wrote for The Atlantic and Harper's, among others, and died at 46, most likely because of his affection for spirits. He wasn't a particularly spooky writer, as best I can tell, but I really enjoyed this piece. Incantation by George Parsons Lathrop. When the leaves by thousands thinned, a thousand times have whirled in the wind, and the moon with hollow cheek, staring from her hollow height, consolation seems to seek. From the dim, re-echoing night, and the fog streaks dead and white, like ghosts of lost delight, o'er highest earth and lowest sky, then autumn work thy witchery. Strew the grounds with poppy seeds, and let my bed be hung with weeds, growing gaunt and rank and tall, drooping o'er me like a pall.
Send thy stealthy white-eyed mist across my brow to turn and twist, fold on fold and leave me blind, to save all visions in the mind. Then, in the depth of rain-fed streams, I shall slumber, and in dreams slide through some long glen that burns with the crust of blood-red ferns and brown withered wings of brake, like a burning lava lake. So urged to fearful faster flow, but the awful gasp, hawk hawk of the crow, shall pass by many a haunted rood of the nutty, odorous wood, or where the hemlocks lean and loom shall fill my heart with bitter gloom, till lured by light, reflected cloud, a burst aloft my watery shroud, and upward through the ether sail, far above the shrill wind's wail. But, falling thence, my soul evolve with the dust-dead flowers dissolve, and gliding out at last to sea, lulled to a long tranquility, the perfect poise of seasons keep with tides that rest at neap. So must be fulfilled the rite that giveth me the dead year's might. And at dawn I shall arise, a spirit, though with human eyes, a human form and human face, and where'er I go or stay, there the summer's perished grace shall be with me, night and day.
fear, and you know she's gonna stay there, because her nails are deep in your hair, and she made you so She's your little voodoo doll.
Exists to showcase music and ideas. I am not an expert at anything, and I have no agenda beyond fostering curiosity. The show is not monetized on any platform. It's available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and others. A video version is available on the Cryonic Mind YouTube page. If you can like, subscribe, comment, etc., it helps the show's visibility. If your music was featured here and you'd prefer it was not, let me know and I will remove it from the feed. You can reach the show at spookatorium@gmail.com. The website can be found at spookatorium.org, and your comments are always welcome. Thanks very much for spending some time here.
fulfills his promise. One look in his eye, everyone denies ever having met him, ever having met him, ever having met him, ever having met him, ever having.
That was Tom Waits with Black Wings from the Bone Machine record. Before that was Susie and the Banshees with the 1981 Peel Sessions performance of Voodoo Dolly. And opening that set was Part One with Ghosts. This Poe story was published in 1845 and at the time was mistakenly believed to be a factual account of something that really happened. But Poe admits in his correspondence that it was purely fictional.
The Facts in the Case of M. Valdemar by Edgar Allan Poe. Of course, I shall not pretend to consider it any matter for wonder that the extraordinary case of M. Valdemar has excited discussion. It would be a miracle had it not, especially under the circumstances. Through the desire of all parties concerned to keep the affair from the public, at least for the present, or until we had further opportunities for investigation, through our endeavors to effect this, a garbled or exaggerated account made its way into society and became a source of many unpleasant misrepresentations and, very naturally, a great deal of disbelief. It is now rendered necessary that I give the facts, as far as I comprehend them myself. They are, succinctly, these. My attention, for the last 3 years, had been repeatedly drawn to the subject of mesmerism, and about 9 months ago, it occurred to me, quite suddenly, that in the series of experiments made hitherto, there had been a very remarkable and most unaccountable omission. No person had as yet been mesmerized in articulo mortis. It remained to be seen first whether, in such a condition, there existed in a patient any susceptibility to the magnetic influence. Secondly, whether, if any existed, it was impaired or increased by the condition. Thirdly, to what extent and for how long a period the encroachments of death might be arrested by the process. There were other points to be ascertained, but these most excited my curiosity, the last in especial from the immensely important character of its consequences. In looking around me for some subject by whose means I might test these particulars, I was brought to think of my friend M. Ernest Valdemar, the well-known compiler of the Bibliotheca Forensica and author, under the nom de plume of Issachar Marx, of the Polish versions of Wallenstein and Gargantua. M. Valdemar, who has resided primarily in Harlem, New York, since the year 1839, is, or was, particularly noticeable for the extreme spareness of his person, his lower limbs much resembling those of John Randolph, and also for the whiteness of his whiskers in violent contrast to the blackness of his hair, the latter, in consequence, being very generally mistaken for a wig. His temperament was markedly nervous and rendered him a good subject for mesmeric experiment. On two or three occasions, I had put him to sleep with little difficulty, but was disappointed in other results which his peculiar constitution had naturally led me to anticipate. His will was at no period positively or thoroughly under my control, and in regard to clairvoyance, I could accomplish with him nothing to be relied upon. I was always attributed my failure at these points to the disordered state of his health. For some months previous to my becoming acquainted with him, his physicians had declared him a confirmed phthisis. It was his custom indeed to speak calmly of his own approaching disillusion, as a matter of fact, neither to be avoided nor regretted. When the ideas to which I have alluded first occurred to me, it was of course very natural that I should think of M. Valdemar. I knew the steady philosophy of the man too well to apprehend any scruples from him, and he had no relatives in America who would be likely to interfere. I spoke to him frankly upon the subject, and to my surprise, his interest seemed vividly excited. I say to my surprise, for although he had always yielded his person freely to my experiments, he had never before given me any tokens of sympathy with what I did. His disease was that of a character who would admit of exact calculation in respect to the epoch of his termination in death. And it was finally arranged between us that he would send for me about 24 hours before the period announced by his physicians as that of his decease. It is now rather more than 7 months since I received from M. Valdemar himself the subjoined note. My dear P., as you may as well come now, D and F are agreed that I cannot hold out beyond tomorrow midnight, and I think they have hit the time very nearly. Signed, Valdemar. I received this note within half an hour after it was written, and in 15 minutes more, I was in the dying man's chamber. I had not seen him for 10 days, and was appalled by the fearful alteration which the brief interval had wrought in him. His face wore a leaden hue, his eyes were utterly lusterless, and the emaciation was so extreme that the skin had been broken through by the cheekbones. His expectoration was excessive. The pulse was barely perceptible. He retained, nevertheless, in a very remarkable manner, both his mental power and a certain degree of physical strength. He spoke with distinctness, took some palliative medicines without aid, and then, when I entered the room, was occupied in penciling memoranda in a pocketbook. He was propped up in the bed by pillows. Dr. P. and F. were in attendance. After pressing Valdemar's hand, I took these gentlemen aside and obtained from them a minute account of the patient's condition. The left lung had been for 18 months in a semi-osseous or cartilaginous state, and was of course entirely useless for all purposes of vitality. The right, in its upper portion, was also partially, if not thoroughly, ossified, while the lower region was merely a mass of purulent tubercles, running one into another. Several extensive perforations existed, and at one point, permanent adhesion to the ribs had taken place. These appearances in the right lobe were of comparatively recent date. The ossification had proceeded with very unusual rapidity. No sign of it had been discovered a month before, and the adhesion had only been observed during the 3 previous days. Independently of the epithesis, the patient was suspected of aneurysm of the aorta, but on this point the osseous symptoms rendered an exact diagnosis impossible. It was the opinion of both physicians that M. Valdemar should die about midnight on the morrow, Sunday. It was 7 o'clock on Saturday evening then. On quitting the invalid's bedside to hold conversation with myself, Doctors D and F had bidden him a final farewell. It had not been their intention to return, but at my request they agreed to look in upon the patient about 10 the next night. When they had gone, I spoke freely with M. Valdemar on the subject of his approaching dissolution, as well as more particularly of the experiment proposed. He still professed himself quite willing and even anxious to have it made, and urged me to commence it at once. A male and female nurse were in attendance, but I did not feel myself altogether at liberty to engage in a task of this character with no more reliable witnesses than these people, in case of sudden accident might prove. I therefore postponed operations until about 8 the next night, when the arrival of a medical student with whom I had some acquaintance, Mr. Theodore L., relieved me from further embarrassment. It had been my design originally to wait for the physicians, but I was induced to proceed first by the urgent entreaties of M. Valdemar, and secondly by my conviction that I had not a moment to lose, as he was evidently sinking fast. Mr. L. was so kind as to accede to my desire that he would take notes of all that occurred, and it is from his memoranda that what I now have to relate is, for the most part, either condensed or copied verbatim. It wanted about 8 minutes, when, taking the patient's hand, I begged him to state as distinctly as he could to Mr. L. whether he, M. Valdemar, was entirely willing that I should make the experiment of mesmerizing him in his then condition. He replied feebly and quite audibly, "Yes, I wish to be mesmerized." adding immediately afterwards, "I fear you have deferred it too long." While he spoke thus, I commenced the passes, which I had already found most effectual in subduing him. He was evidently influenced with the first lateral stroke of my hand across his forehead, but although I exerted all my powers, no further perceptible effect was induced until some minutes after 10 o'clock, when Doctors D and F called, according to appointment. I explained to them, in a few words, what I designed, and as they opposed no objection, saying that the patient was already in the death agony, I proceeded without hesitation, exchanging, however, the lateral passes for downward ones, and directing my gaze entirely into the right eye of the sufferer. By this time, his pulse was imperceptible, and his breathing was stertorous, and at intervals of half a minute. This condition was nearly unaltered for a quarter of an hour. At the expiration of this period, however, a natural, although very deep sigh escaped the bosom of the dying man, and the stertorous breathing ceased. That is to say, his stertorousness was no longer apparent. The intervals were undiminished. The patient's extremities were of icy coldness. At 5 minutes before 11, I perceived unequivocal signs of the mesmeric influence. The glassy roll of the eye was exchanged for that expression of an uneasy inward examination which is never seen except in cases of sleepwalking, and in which it is quite impossible to mistake. With a rapid few lateral passes, I made the lids quiver as in insipid sleep, and with a few more, closed them altogether. I was not satisfied, however, with this, but continued the manipulations vigorously and with the fullest exertion of the will until I had completely stiffened the limbs of the slumberer. After placing them in a seemingly easy position, the legs were at full length, the arms were nearly so, and reposed upon the bed at a moderate distance from the loins, the head was very slightly elevated. When I accomplished this, it was fully midnight, and I requested the gentleman present to examine M. Valdemar's condition. After a very few experiments, they admitted him to be in an unusually perfect state of mesmeric trance. The curiosity of both the physicians was greatly excited. Dr. D. resolved at once to remain with the patient all night, while Dr. F. took leave with a promise to return at daybreak. Mr. L. and the nurses remained. We left Valdemar entirely undisturbed until about 3 o'clock in the morning, when I approached him and found him in precisely the same condition as when Dr. F. went away. That is to say, he lay in the same position, the pulse was imperceptible, the breathing was gentle, scarcely noticeable unless through the application of a mirror to the lips. The eyes were closed naturally, and the limbs were as rigid and as cold as marble. Still, the general appearance was certainly not that of death. As I approached M. Valdemar, I made a kind of half effort to influence his right arm into pursuit of my own. As I passed the latter gently to and fro above his person, in such experiments with this patient I had never perfectly succeeded before, and assuredly I had little thought of succeeding now, but to my astonishment his arm very readily, although feebly, followed every direction I assigned it with mine. I determined to hazard a few words of conversation. "Mr. Valdemar," I said, "are you asleep?" He made no answer, but I perceived a tremor about his lips and was thus induced to repeat the question again and again. At his third repetition, his whole frame was agitated by a very slight shivering. The eyelids unclosed themselves so far as to display a white line of the ball. The lips moved sluggishly, and from between them, in a barely audible whisper, issued the words, "Yes, asleep now. Do not wake me. Let me die so." Here I felt the limbs and found them as rigid as ever. The right arm, as before, obeyed the direction of my hand. I questioned the sleep waker again. "Do you still feel pain in the breast, Mr. Valdemar?" The answer now was immediate, but even less audible than before. "No pain. I'm dying." I did not think it advisable to disturb him further just then, and nothing more was said or done until the arrival of Dr. F., who came a little before sunrise and expressed unbounded astonishment at finding the patient still alive. After feeling the pulse and applying a mirror to the lips, He requested me to speak with the sleep-waker again. I did so, saying, M. Valdemar, do you still sleep? As before, some minutes elapsed ere a reply was made, and during the interval the dying man seemed to be collecting his energies to speak. At my fourth repetition of the question, he said very faintly, almost inaudibly, yes, still asleep, dying. It was now the opinion, or rather the wish of the physicians, that M. Valdemar should be suffered to remain undisturbed in his present apparently tranquil condition until death should supervene. And this, it was generally agreed, must now take place within a few minutes. I concluded, however, to speak to him once more, and merely repeated my previous question. While I spoke, there came a marked change over the countenance of the sleep-waker. The eyes rolled themselves slowly open, the pupils disappeared upwardly. The skin generally assumed a cadaverous hue, resembling not so much parchment as white paper, and the circular hectic spots which hitherto had been strongly defined in the center of each cheek went out at once. I use this expression because the suddenness of their departure put me in the mind of nothing so much as the extinguishment of a candle by a puff of breath. The upper lip, at the same time, writhed itself away from the teeth, which had previously covered completely, while the lower jaw fell with an audible jerk, leaving the mouth widely extended and disclosing in full view the swollen and blackened tongue. I presume that no member of the party then present had been unaccustomed to deathbed horrors, but so hideous beyond the conception was that appearance of M. Valdemar at this moment that there was a general shrinking back from the region of the bed. I now feel that I have reached a point in this narrative at which every reader will be startled into positive disbelief. It is my business, however, simply to proceed. There was no longer the faintest sign of vitality in M. Valdemar, and concluding him to be dead, we were consigning him to the charge of the nurses, when a strong vibratory motion was observable in the tongue. This continued for perhaps a minute. At the expiration of this period, there issued from the distended and motionless jaws a voice, such as it would be madness in me to attempt describing. There are indeed two or three epithets which might be considered as applicable to it in part. I might say, for example, that the sound was harsh and broken and hollow. But the hideous whole is indescribable for the simple reason that no similar sounds have ever jarred upon the ears of humanity. There were two particulars, nevertheless, which I thought then, and I still think, might fairly be stated as characteristics of the intonation, as well adapted to convey some idea of its unearthly peculiarity. In the first place, the voice seemed to reach our ears, at least mine, from a vast distance, or from some deep cavern within the earth. In the second place, it impressed me, I fear indeed that it will be impossible to make myself comprehended, as gelatinous or glutinous matters impress the sense of touch. I have spoken both of sound and of voice, and I mean to say that the sound was one of distinct, of even wonderfully thrilling distinct, sibilification. M. Valdemar spoke, obviously, in reply to the question I had pronounced to him a few minutes before. I had asked him, it will be remembered, if he slept. Now he said, yes, no, I have been sleeping, and now I am dead. No person present even affected to deny or attempt to repress the unutterable shuddering horror which these few words thus uttered were so well calculated to convey. Mr. L., the student, swooned. The nurses immediately left the chamber and could not be induced to return. My own impressions I would not pretend to render intelligible to the reader. For nearly an hour, we busied ourselves silently, without the utterance of a word, in endeavors to revive Mr. L. When he came to himself, we addressed ourselves again to an investigation of M. Valdemar's condition. It remained, in all respects, as I have last described it, with the exception that the mirror no longer afforded evidence of respiration. An attempt to draw blood from the arm failed. I should mention, too, that this limb was no further subject to my own will. I endeavored in vain to make it follow the direction of my hand. The only real indication, indeed, of the mesmeric influence was now found in the vibratory movement of the tongue whenever I addressed M. Valdemar with a question. He seemed to be making an effort to reply, but had no longer sufficient volition. To queries put to him by any other person than myself, he seemed utterly insensible. Although I endeavored to place each member of the company in mesmeric rapport with him, I believe that I have now related all that is necessary to an understanding of the sleepwaker's state at this epoch. Other nurses were procured, and at 10 o'clock I left the house in company with the two physicians and Mr. L. In the afternoon, we called again to see the patient. His condition remained precisely the same. We had now some discussion as to the propriety and feasibility of awakening him, but we had little difficulty in agreeing that no good purpose would be served by so doing. It was evident that, so far, death, or what is usually termed death, had been arrested by the mesmeric process. It seemed clear to us all that to awaken M. Valdemar would merely be to ensure his instant, or at least his speedy, dissolution. From this period until the close of last week, an interval of nearly 7 months, we continued to make daily calls at M. Valdemar's house, accompanied now and then by medical and other friends. All this time, the sleepwaker remained exactly as I have described him. The nurses' attention were continual. It was on Friday last that we finally resolved to make the experiment of awakening, or attempting to awaken him. And it is the perhaps unfortunate result of this latter experiment which has given rise to so much discussion in private circles, to so much of what I cannot help thinking unwarranted popular feeling. For the purpose of relieving M. Valdemar of the mesmeric trance, I made use of the customary passes. These, for a time, were unsuccessful. The indication of revival was afforded by a partial descent of the iris. It was observed as especially remarkable that this lowering of the pupil was accompanied by a profuse outflowing of yellowish ichor from beneath the lids of a pungent and highly offensive odor. It was now suggested that I should attempt to influence the patient's arm as heretofore. I made the attempt and failed. Dr. F. then intimated a desire to have me put a question. I did so as follows. M. Valdemar, can you explain to us what are your feelings or wishes now? There was an instant return of the hectic circles on the cheeks. The tongue quivered, or rather rolled violently in the mouth, although the jaws and lips remained rigid as before. And at length, the same hideous voice which I have already described broke forth. For God's sake, quick, quick, put me to sleep, or quick, waken me. Quick, I say to you that I am dead. I was thoroughly unnerved, and for an instant remained undecided what to do. At first, I made an endeavor to recompose the patient, but failing in this through total abeyance of the will, I retraced my steps and as earnestly struggled to awaken him. In this attempt, I soon saw that I should be successful, or at least I soon fancied that my success would be complete. And I am sure that all in the room were prepared to see the patient awaken. For what really occurred, however, it is quite impossible that any human being could have been prepared. As I rapidly made the mesmeric passes amid ejaculations of dead, dead, absolutely bursting from the tongue and not from the lips of the sufferer, its whole frame at once, within the space of a single minute or even less, shrunk, crumbled, absolutely rotted away beneath my hands upon the bed before that whole company. There lay a nearly liquid mass of loathsome, detestable putrescence.
Thank you.
That was Akama Sotes with The Howl of the Werewolf from the Antthology Antizan compilation. Before that was Mombi Yulman with the Hopkinsville Horror Kentucky Goblins from his Wraiths of Appalachia release. And that track is inspired by the Hopkinsville Goblin story, which, if you are not familiar with, is definitely worth checking out. And then that set started with Adderlating and the Howling Pyrophlegathon Below. I always debate for these Halloween episodes whether it should be a goth dance party, a spooky ambient thing, an evil metal show, and end up stitching together some of everything. And we have now entered the evil metal portion of our program.
On the land, so I speak from the dead.
That was Morbid Saint with Damien. Before that was Possessed with the Eyes of Horror from the EP of the same name. And opening that set was Merciful Fate, as tradition dictates, with Desecration of Souls. That is going to do it for this episode. To smash the pumpkins this time, this is Cutworm with Haunt. Thank you for listening. As always, I will talk to you soon.